Hello, and welcome to another episode of Tarot for a Troubled Time, the podcast in which we reflect on our experience of living through the COVID-19 pandemic using the cards of the tarot. I'm your host, River Rose. This past weekend, we entered a new lunar cycle, and millions of people celebrated Diwali, a festival marked primarily by those of Hindu, Jain, and Sikh faiths. Diwali is the festival of lights, and it symbolizes the spiritual triumph of light over darkness or enlightenment over ignorance. Such a celebration is particularly meaningful right now because it seems to me that at the moment, dear listeners, we are suffering in an environment where the truth, something that one would think would be arrived at through enlightenment and that would be provable, is fleeting and impossible to be agreed upon. I recently had my own tarot reading, and one of the things that came up during the reading is that it would be important for me to understand what's true for me right now. What do I think about every day when I think about truth? We tend to think about truth as something empirical, something quantifiable, verifiable, and yet we know very well from world events and from our own lives that getting to the truth isn't always so easy. We live in a moment right now where our lack of consensus on what is true is literally killing us. Some of us accept that COVID-19 is a deadly and easily communicable disease, and we take measures to avoid getting and spreading it. Some of us don't. Some of us accept the result of the U.S. presidential election, which has been characterized by a diverse coalition of top officials at the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency as, quote, the most secure in American history. Some of us, including the outgoing president, don't. Some of us accept that humans, through various behaviors, are generating enough greenhouse gases, that we are causing the temperatures to rise on Earth at a dangerous pace. Some of us don't. Some of us accept that species evolve. Some of us don't. Some of us follow a shadowy figure named Q, who proclaims that a Satan-worshipping, child-trafficking, cannibalistic cabal of Democrats is out to destroy the outgoing president of the United States. Some of us don't. Some of us insist that the earth is flat. Some of us don't. Some of us are convinced that racism is in the past or a figment of our imagination. Some of us know that that's not true and that that conviction in and of itself is racist. And of course, these alternate realities, these alternate truths, aren't all just at the level of society. They're also in our workplaces and in our families. They're divergent truths that can eat away at any group dynamic to the point where it becomes impossible to continue as a collective. We have seen this for months, for example, with various responses to COVID. Some people still do not believe that COVID is real, or they get so caught up in conspiracy theories about where it really came from or why it's really here that they fail to take in the simple fact that it is here. It is easily spreadable, and it could easily kill any one of us. And this rejection of truth is not merely for those who haven't yet been touched by COVID. This week, CNN reported that a South Dakota registered nurse named Jody Doring has had patients dying of COVID who do not believe that COVID exists. She said, quote, "I think the hardest thing to watch is that people are still looking for something else and they want a magic answer and they don't believe that COVID is real. It wasn't one particular patient, it's just a culmination of so many people, and their last dying words are, this can't be happening, it's not real. And when they should be spending time FaceTiming their families, they're filled with anger and hatred, and it just made me really sad. And I just can't believe that those are going to be their last thoughts and words." She also said that she's had the experience where she would urge patients to reach out to their families because their oxygen levels were dropping rapidly, and they would insist they were going to be fine. So, as I was saying, this rejection of truth, or those divergent, incompatible so-called truths, are not just about global or political circumstances and developments, right? They can also be very personal or unique to us. This week, I randomly came across a Facebook profile of someone who had bullied me quite persistently in middle school and high school. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say that this person made school very traumatic for me. And when I came upon her profile, I noticed that her public posts were all about kindness and love and self-awareness. Now, of course, I don't know what has happened in this woman's life in the decades since she was a teenager. Maybe she's had a reckoning about her abusive behavior and now she's become a fucking spiritual guru. I don't know. But I gotta say, I had a hard time believing that these posts represented her truth. This person was a terror to me when she was younger. She was ignorant, she was cruel, she was a fucking asshole. And because I know that social media is often not representative of how a person truly thinks and behaves in life, I have a hard time believing that the social media portrait of this person represents the truth about her. You see that a lot of times online, right? You don't know. We see a lot of things happening online over social media, but we got to take those with a grain of salt. We don't know where the truth lies. Anyway, moving on. My point is, in a world in which so much hinges on truth, how can we survive if we don't agree on what the truth is? The Buddha said, and I quote, "Do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it. Do not believe in anything simply because it is spoken and rumored by many. Do not believe in anything simply because it is found written in your religious books. Do not believe in anything merely on the authority of your teachers and elders. Do not believe in traditions because they have been handed down for many generations. But after observation and analysis, when you find that anything agrees with reason and is conducive to the good and benefit of one and all, then accept it and live up to it." I'm saying all this to say, this week I wanted to ask the tarot something about truth, but what is a truth didn't seem as urgent or as easily accessible as something more basic. Where is the truth? And so that's the question I landed on for this week. If you've listened to previous episodes, you'll know that I keep my readings to 3 cards or fewer, and you'll also know that I've done different pieces of the Celtic Cross spread, which is a 10-card tarot spread, and it's one of the more common and more famous spreads. I often do the past, present, future spread, which is the horizontal part of the Celtic cross. And I've also done the mini 2-card cross at the center of the Celtic cross to think about a situation and its main challenge or opposing factor. This week, I thought we'd try a 3-card spread that represents the vertical portion of the center of the Celtic cross to explore our subconscious. There's a central card, which represents our situation. There's a card above it, which represents a known influence, and a card below it, which represents a root cause or subconscious influence that we may not be fully aware of. That, in other words, gets to the more basic truth. So with the question set and the spread chosen, I drew 3 cards and I got the 2 of Wands at the top, the Hierophant in the center, and the 9 of Wands reversed on the bottom. Again, the 2 of Wands, the Hierophant, and the 9 of Wands reversed. Now, I'd like to focus on the central card, which represents the situation we're in and is the only major arcana of the 3. The Hierophant, known in some decks as the Pope. The Hierophant, interestingly enough, represents conventional structures, institutions, or systems. The Hierophant, at their best, is a teacher and a translator of the spiritual world into the earthly world, but they can be dogmatic and insistent on rigid so-called truths that have no relevance to everyday people's lives and that could potentially hurt people in their everyday lives. The modern spellcaster's Hierophant today is not striking me as particularly spiritual or compassionate. They're faceless and they're holding up presumably a book of religious teachings in one hand and a whip in the other, suggesting that you must believe this truth or else. There's a reward and punishment element to the belief system presented here today that leaves no room for acquiring knowledge on one's own or critical thinking. Now, the system that this Hierophant represents can be our political system, but can also be another system, your workplace, your family, any system. Even if a system is small, there can be a lot of complex dynamics within it. And although your system can provide stability, it can also be constraining. Or if there are biases or corruption or dysfunctional dynamics within that system, it can obscure the truth and can be quite dangerous for the people in it. Now, looking at the other two cards above and below, the Two of Wands and the Nine of Wands reversed respectively, it's interesting that these are both wands, suit of fire, spirit, energy, and will. So they're related, and there is a progression between the two, which is an early card in the progression of wands, the two, and the nine, which is quite advanced in the progression. The Two of Wands is a card about choice and planning and contemplation. It's also about being safe in the comfort of your own abode or domain or home. The Rider-Waite-Smith Two of Wands is a man contemplating the world, a literal globe, from the comfort of his own castle. While the modern Spellcaster's Tarot, our Two of Wands, has a man sitting comfortably on a tree stump speaking to a bird he's holding in his hand, while he is strangely fastened to ropes to the two wands on either side of him. So there's a sense of safety and stillness, being able to freely contemplate your surroundings and possibly the world at large. But there's also kind of a stuckness in one place. The Nine of Wands, on the other hand, represents a radically different scenario, one of being out in the world, in the wilderness, in fact, and therefore not safe at all, of being in a fight that you've been fighting for a long time and being battle scarred, but ready to fight on and to fend off attacks to the end. The Rider-Waite-Smith Nine of Wands shows a wounded warrior with bandages holding a wand as a weapon while eight other wands are perched in the ground behind him, whereas our Nine of Wands shows a relentless warrior who has created a fortress around her with eight wands and is holding the ninth in a way that shows us she's ready for attacks. The fact that the card is reversed in this case reminds us merely, I think, that when you choose to throw yourself into a fight and to fight on, even if you've been hurt, you're actually showing your willingness to be vulnerable. And your knowledge that you can only come to a desired conclusion if you're willing to be hurt and to defend your ground, or perhaps in our case, your truth. The Nine of Wands in this spread, and in general actually, reminds me of a well-known quote by a US president of the distant past, Theodore Roosevelt, who in a speech in 1910 said, and I quote, "It is not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles or where the doer of deeds could have done better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming, but who does actually strive to do the deeds, who knows great enthusiasms, the great devotions, who spends himself in a worthy cause, who at the best knows in the end that the triumph of high achievement, and who at the worst, if he fails, at least fails while daring greatly, so that his place shall never be with those cold and timid souls who neither know victory nor defeat." I'm looking at these two wand cards together and mashing up the words of the Buddha and of Roosevelt. I'm placing the emphasis on the nine, which is indicating action, not thought, and which is also the root cause or underlying influence for our question, where's the truth? Because I think the meaning of the spread comes from the juxtaposition of these two influences, the two and the nine. We can really think about how we can get to the truth when we juxtapose these two scenes in related but very different cards, where we have planning on the one hand, execution on the other, youth on the one hand, experience on the other, theory on the one hand, practice on the other, order versus chaos, and thought versus action. Putting all the cards together and thinking about the question, I think the cards are saying that we're in a system that discourages critical thinking and fact-based knowledge, that encourages the clinging to dogma and past tradition, that has mantras like, make America great again. In such a system, we have to really work to get to the truth, and we have to sometimes be prepared to defend it when it is being denied. We know that planning and reading and the neatness and safety of books and of sitting behind a screen can help us preserve our truth and communicate our truth without us having to do a lot of work. But it is only truly when we get out in the real world, head out into the wilderness, engage with people who are different than we are, serve people who are different than we are and who are less privileged than we are, and when we debate about the nature of truth, that we can know and defend the truth, not as a critic sitting at home posting on Instagram and Twitter, but as the person out in the arena, out in the world, defending a truth, as the Buddha says, to the good and benefit of one and all. And so with that, I end this week's reading. I hope you got something out of it. I'll share the reading on Twitter and Instagram. Please look for it on my personal account at Call Me River Rose. If you have questions, comments, and suggestions for me, you can also email me at iamriverrose@gmail.com. If you like what you've heard, I encourage you to leave me a 5-star rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you can, and to share the podcast with your community. Until next week, be well, take care, and remember, do not believe in anything simply because you have heard it.